What a time to be alive. You tuned into the Science Package here on Madiba's Radio podcast, where we connect, inform, and engage. And of course, to introduce myself, my name is Tsoka Tello Ndlovu. I like to call myself the brightest star on the airwaves. Once Tsoka is on your airwaves, nothing will ever be the same. And of course, this is Science Package, where we talk about all things STEM, science, technology, engineering, math, geography, tourism, anything in that realm. I've got you. Let's unpack the tea together, because every week that we meet, listen, there's just more and more things that need to be discussed. And of course, what is on today's roster, because as much as we love rosters in other circumstances, if you know what I mean, today's roster, we're going to get into what's going on around the city and beyond. Firstly, we'll be speaking about potholes and why they're becoming a problem. Because if you're a driver, or maybe if you're not even a driver, I could still feel that potholes would affect you. But the potholes that we are seeing in Port Elizabeth is just, yeah, it's a cause for concern. And then after that, we'll be discussing why people are actually moving to small towns. You know, there's always that tale of, you know, people move to the cities, Joburg, Cape Town, Durban, the big cities for jobs, for employment. But that is slowly changing because people are moving to small towns. People are choosing a much more quieter, more simple life. And we're going to find out why. And then lastly, to kind of piggyback from last week, I mean, it is still February, unless you're listening to this at a later stage, which is okay too. But you know, it is still February and it still is Valentine's Month, where we're speaking about all things love. And because we love out here, because we love love, and last week we mentioned attachment theory and the different attachment styles, we'll definitely be going deeper into attachment theory and understanding the deeper context of it, as well as the attachment styles that exist. And maybe, hey, you can diagnose yourself. I don't recommend self-diagnosis, but I took a test on it and I found out my attachment style, so maybe you'll do the same too. But you know, with such things, it's always good to go to psychologists. But let's get straight into the tea. Let's get straight into it. Now, listen, the potholes in Nelson Mandela Bay are becoming a problem, especially for the people in Lovemore Heights, because, for example, they had 4 potholes on Louise Michelle Drive, and it took nearly 10 months for them to fix it. 10 months is a long time. Yes, it's not a year, but it took 10 whole months for them to fix it. And that's not even the worst part. The worst part is the fact that when the municipality finally came, they only fixed 1 out of the 4. Which is kind of like, you know, we're grateful that there was some initiative, but at the same time, it's just like, why not fix all of them? Because, you know, you spend so much petrol driving to Lovemore Heights, because it is on the edge of the city. So it's like, it's not somewhere you can go like on a random Tuesday, but you know, so you drove that far just to fix 1 pothole and call it a day and act like, yeah, I did my big one there. I cooked there. Like, it doesn't make sense to me. It really doesn't make sense to me. Because I'm just like, it just shows how much and how the municipality thinks of us as people. Now, this is not a hate train to the municipality, because, you know, I don't want any lawsuits. And I'm not saying they're not doing anything. But when it comes to service delivery, Nelson Mandela Bay municipality could do more. Because when you think about a pothole, it's a dangerous thing, because not only does it show that, okay, roads are not being maintained, but it can be so destructive to vehicles, road damage, vehicle wear and tear, safety risk, and frustration. Because now when you're driving, you have to dodge a pothole. And as you're dodging a pothole, maybe you have to drive on the other side of the road. And then once you drive on the other side of the road, you may hit a car, you may hit a person. I know that's very dramatic, but that could happen. And it just shows that a simple pothole can cause so much damage. So it's quite interesting to see that they're not taking it too seriously, especially because community members are feeling ignored and abandoned by the local government. Because at the end of the day, they promised us that basic service delivery, when there's an issue, we'll come solve it. There shall be no potholes. There shall be no lack of rubbish removal. The streets will look clean, you know. There will be lights day and night. Like, such things are promised to us. And when it doesn't happen, we just like, what is going on? Like, what happened to your promise? Because we want a local government that is going to stay consistent and stay standing on business. Because if you don't stand on business, then, you know, What's the point of truly being there? What's the point of truly being there? So it really sparks a broader conversation around service delivery, infrastructure, and public trust, as well as the quality of life that we experience here in the Friendly City. Because as much as so many residents, including myself, love living here, and it's just such a beautiful place and peaceful place to live, if the service delivery and things are starting to look a bit murky, then we have to question that decision. But in Nelson Mandela Bay's defense, I will say, in my personal opinion experience, not to invalidate anyone or the residences, but I come from Joburg, specifically the municipality of Ekurhuleni. And if anybody listening here knows Ekurhuleni, you will know that the East Rand has potholes for days. Like, even last year when my family came for graduation, actually, they were shocked. They were like, PE doesn't have potholes. The roads are well maintained. And I'm like, they are, because when I'm this side, I don't even think about potholes. But back at home, it's like the potholes are everywhere. And they're not even just those small potholes. It's those potholes where it's just like, it's chai if you go into it. And it just makes driving so difficult, especially somebody who does drive sometimes, but is not as comfortable with the wheel as me yet. So now that not only do I have to get comfortable with the wheel, now I have to judge a pothole. And one thing about me personally, like, I ain't got no time for that. Like, if it was up to me, if I was driving my own car, I would just, you know, go into the pothole and just pray for the best. But unfortunately, I'm not driving my own car. I don't have a car. But, you know, anything can happen. So, because I have to be conscious of, this is not my car, so I can't just act very waywardly and just do what I want to do. Because if it was me, I'm like, you know what, I ain't got no time to be maneuvering a pothole where it's like, you must go under the car. But then, all the times I've tried for a pothole to go under the car, it doesn't work out. Either I go into the pothole, or I just go on the other side of the road, and it's just a mess. I ain't got no time for that. So, it just gets back to the point of, we wouldn't be here if potholes got fixed, because drivers don't want to do that on a day-to-day basis. It's inconvenient. It's stressful. It's just like, sometimes, yes, as a driver, you always need to be locked in and be aware of your surroundings, because if you're not, then that's very dangerous. But I feel like worrying about a pothole shouldn't be one of those stresses. We should be stressing about, okay, stopping at red lights, stopping at a stop sign, allowing pedestrians the right of way, such things. K53, we don't talk about potholes in K53, and there's a reason for that, because we are learning in a way of, there are no potholes, the roads are perfect, it's all about being a safe driver. So now we gotta stress about potholes. It's just like, can't be doing this. We cannot be doing this in 2026. But of course, we've spoken about potholes, and, you know, it's quite sad. Yes, I do feel like Ekurhuleni has more potholes than Nelson Mandela Bay, but that doesn't mean that Nelson Mandela Bay can feel superior and be like, oh my gosh, like, we're eating it up. Like, maybe it's just in Summer Strand that there's no potholes. Maybe I should go walk outside and find a pothole in Summer Strand, take a photo, tag the newspaper to be like, I see a pothole here. That would be very messy, actually. That would be so shady. But, you know, sometimes you gotta be shady in life. But speaking of life, you know, there's different ways that we as people want to live our lives. Some people like busyness. Some people like calm living. Some people like urbanism. Some people like a farm life. Some people like the rural area. Some people don't. And it's so interesting that recently, actually, a lot of South Africans are actually moving to small towns. Small towns are getting their attention. And it's so curious, because I want to find out why. As somebody who loves city life, I love busyness. Well, depends on the type of busyness. Like, I like city life, but I also do feel like I like suburban life. Like, suburban life is where it's at, with its good and bad, but I just like urban areas, prefer to like the rural areas. You know, I don't see myself owning a farm. Like, that's not happening. I can say that now, but 10 years later, I could change my mind. But I don't really see myself enjoying farm life, you know. I love cows, they're cute, but I don't want one. I could ride a horse, you know, that could be majestic, but yeah, it's just not the type of life I want to live. Because imagine having to travel like 100 kilometers to the next moor. Imagine, I can't do that. Like, you know, like, we don't need to have a road trip to buy bread. Like, no. We can't have that. Now, people are choosing quality of life, a slower pace, and community over hustle. Because COVID-19 allowed us to actually have the ability to work from home, that you don't need to be in an office Monday to Friday. You can just open your laptop, open your phone, and do what you need to do. A lot of South Africans are like, huh, so why am I living in the city? Because when you really think about city life, as much as there is the hustle and the bustle and the things going down and the nightlife and everything around that, and it's fun, I do understand the stresses of it. Number one, traffic. Like, if you are from any of the big cities in South Africa, you will know that traffic is bad. And it doesn't matter how many lanes you put on a highway, traffic will be there because people are getting to where they need to go. And imagine wasting an hour of your day just sitting in your car in traffic. It's just like, I mean, that does also speak to our public transport system in South Africa, but that's a whole nother tangent. But traffic is one of the main reasons as to why people are like, maybe the city's not for me. Like, why am I spending 2 hours of my day stuck in traffic? It doesn't make sense. And just the whole life of urbanism, the busyness. You really, within the busyness, sometimes you get so caught up into it that sometimes you tend to lose yourself and lose the quiet moments that matter in life. Of course, this depends on person to person, but sometimes you just need to slow down and really just smell the trees, smell the nature, be outside, live a slower life, be within the community. Because also another thing about urban life, most people don't even know their neighbors. They don't even talk to their neighbors. And it's so interesting. Like, for example, during recess, I had met one of my neighbors, which was so interesting because they'd moved in 2020 and we're only meeting now. As somebody who's lived in my childhood home all my life, and I was just like, oh, why are we only meeting now after like 6 years? It's very interesting. But it just shows that in urbanism, there sometimes can be that lack of community. And also another thing that a lot of Africans are seeing as to why they're opting for small towns rather than these big cities is rent. Rent is expensive. So to stay in the popping areas, you need to drop down like 8, 9, 10, 12, 15K for a one-bedroom apartment. Imagine. Cape Town is even worse because I recently saw a development actually that's happening in Cape Town city center, if I'm not mistaken, where they're building low-cost housing, but the price point they're putting low-cost housing at is 10,000. And it's actually insane. Because if you think about it, for example, low-cost housing is supposed to cater for people who cannot afford to maybe like buy like a 2-bedroom apartment, a 3-bedroom apartment. What if you're an intern? And we know internships don't pay much. So most internships pay like 10,000, 8,000, sometimes 6,000. But now your rent is 10,000. So it's like they were trying to cook something, but it's not working. Because also, if you have to consider that, okay, 30% of your rent needs to go to, as they say financially, that your rent shouldn't be over 30% of your average income. So if 10,000 has to be your 10% of your income, how much do you need to earn to live comfortably? Like, it just sparked those questions. And I know I'm using Cape Town as a prime example because, you know, Cape Town is on steroids. It's on another level, but we see this in many cities across Africa where it's just like, if you want to live close to work or in areas that will give you the most advantage, you're gonna have to pay a hefty price. And that price is not nice because now you're living paycheck to paycheck. And when you live paycheck to paycheck, you can't enjoy life. So it's just complicated. Now, common small towns that people are moving to is Prince Albert, Greyton, and Clarence. Now, I must say, I've been to Greyton before, briefly, and it's a cute town. I've always wanted to go to Clarence, which is in the Free State, and Greyton is in KwaZulu-Natal. But Clarence is one place I really want to go as a tourist because I see a lot of like niche restaurants, and there's also the Golden Gate Mountains there close to Lesotho, and it's just like, I don't know, it's just something about it that I'm like, I need to go there one day, and I shall, you know, maybe this year, who knows. But not only are we talking about the certain small towns, but one thing that people have really mentioned when it comes to why they're moving to small towns is the food culture. Because listen, in a big city, yes, we have our fast food chains and we do have restaurants and a lot of big nightlife, but sometimes they can feel very commercialized. You know, you don't necessarily get that nicheness, that uniqueness, that flavor of the town. You know, like, no shade, but like Rocco Mama's, Doppio Zero, Mike's Kitchen, News Cafe. You know, such restaurants are everywhere, so they can't really tell you about a place. But those niche restaurants, they really tell you, like, what is this town about? Is it coastal? Is it mountainous? Is it an art city? Well, not a city, but a town. Is it an artistic town? Is it a more industrial town? Like, such things can really shape culture, because culture is important. And to experience culture is such a beautiful thing, especially on a daily. And a lack of culture can just make life feel so dry. And a lot of residents, especially in towns such as McGregor and Paternoster and Western Cape, say that a lot of visitors are attracted to those towns because of the food culture. Especially when it comes to coastal towns, like coastal towns and their seafood is just absolutely amazing. There's just some beauty about living by the coast that's just like, wow, like it's just so, it just has that thing. And one place that I've been to at some point in my life, like 10 years ago, I think it was 10 years ago, but there's this town in KZN called St. Lucia, where it's in the middle of the St. Lucia wetland, and it's a whole nature reserve, and the town is just so, like, it's small, it's tiny, but it's just so intimate. Like, I remember that, like, hippos walk the streets, by the river there's crocodiles. I didn't see a crocodile, but, you know, it was just so interesting, and it was just so beautiful. And that beach there within the wetland, there was a specific beach called Cape Vidal. Oh my gosh, one of the beautifulest places I've ever seen in my life. I want to go back there. But such towns like that, you can just experience the beauty, experience the culture, experience nature, and just what it means to be human and what it means to really appreciate everything that is around us. And to appreciate everything around us, we also see how artists, makers, and creators thrive in small town settings, such as in places as New Bethesda and Ribe Castile, which is found in the Eastern Cape, where there's notable for galleries, studios, markets. Such things shape culture. You know, creativity, the arts is such a beautiful thing. It shapes life. And yes, you know, we always say to creators that, you know, if you want to make it in the industry, you got to move to the big city. And which is true to an extent. I do feel like sometimes art can get lost in commercialization, because now you're just trying to make it big. You're trying to fit within the standards of, okay, how am I going to get my big break? How can I get the script, this painting, my music out there for people to hear? And does that take away from the creative experience? So such conversations don't really happen in a small town, because you have the freedom to kind of explore what you really want and really allow your art to grow and exist on its own in such a small space that can truly appreciate it. Yes, you might not have the financial backing sometimes. I mean, sometimes you do, but, you know, sometimes the financial aspect of things may be a bit murky, as well as just the overall attention of things. If you have dreams of, like, allowing your art to go global and international, it's just like, small town could be a bit trickier. But to really appreciate the art, sometimes you really need for the art to live in simplicity. So it's quite interesting how a lot of people are moving to these small towns and establishing community within these small towns, because sometimes you need to know your neighbor, you need to know the people within your town, because sometimes you need help. Sometimes, not even just about help, but sometimes it's great to know people, and it's great to be in a space where there's such belonging. I know some people complain about small towns where it's like everybody knows everyone, so if you do something messy, it news flies fast. And I know Port Elizabeth is not a small town, it is a city. It's not the biggest city, but it's a big city. And already here in Port Elizabeth, I'm just like, I walk around like every day, and there's not a day where I don't see somebody I know. And it's just like, sometimes it gets irritating. And it's like, sometimes you find out that everybody's connected somehow, which is good and bad at times, but small towns and small cities in this context allow for that connection. Because now that we all know each other, we can collaborate and just make life a little bit better. And we can also promote tourism, because tourism becomes more intentional and immersive rather than just going around. Okay, because when you're in a big city, because there's so much to do, you don't really experience attractions. You do experience them, but it's more so like, okay, maybe today I'm going to go to Addo Elephant Park, and then after Addo, I'm going to go to Donkin Village. After going to Donkin, I'm going to go to the lighthouse at Cape Reef. After Cape Reef, I'm going to go there to King's Beach. You know, you're just ticking things off the box instead of actually like taking your time, soaking in the experience, and really enjoying what makes these certain spots beautiful without kind of the tragedy of urbanism, because that's also another thing where you can experience a beach, but like there's litter, it's busy, it's chaotic, you know? So it's just, it gets very chaotic. And I understand why a lot of Africans are like, you know what? I don't need to work in an office. Let me just move to a small town and just save money and save my peace. So I might even one day consider it, just be like, you know what? Let me move to a small town. I think personally, another small town I would say I would love to move to, even though with like the towns I chose are just very random, but I just like them for some reason. It's like Kuruman in the Northern Cape, Barberton in Mpumalanga. Like, I don't know, they're just so interesting. And I don't really have a reason. I'm just like, those two towns are just like, huh. Also, Tzaneen in Limpopo, I really like. In Eastern Cape, I like Jeffreys Bay, too. I do want to explore Makanda, Grahamstown. And, yeah, I think those are the small towns on the top of my head that I wouldn't mind living in, you know, having a good time there, just, you know, isolating from society. But you know, hey, sometimes you gotta be in the city. And speaking of the city and speaking about experiencing life and really understanding what makes life life, we're gonna go straight into attachment theory. Now, what is attachment theory? Now, attachment theory, by definition, is a psychological framework that explains how emotional bonds are formed between individuals, especially between infants and caregivers, and how these early bonds influence relationships throughout life. Now, last week we did speak about attachment theory and the ways, the different attachment styles when it comes to your romantic partner and how you kind of go about relationships and how our early caregivers and how we kind of grew up affects that. And it still does. And understanding attachment styles can really aid you when it comes to navigating not only romantic relationships, but friendships and your overall life. Now, people are believed to be born with an innate need to seek closeness and security from their caregivers. Now, early caregiving qualities help shape trust, intimacy, and relational patterns later in life, which leads to how we establish friendships in adulthood, how we establish romantic relationships. Now, how do these attachment bonds work? Now, attachment refers to deep emotional connection formed by early caregivers, and from that and how that is conducted, it can kind of determine how you will go about it in your adult life. But let's get straight into what are the four main attachment styles. And maybe through explaining any of these four attachment styles, maybe you'll pick up which one resonates with you the most. Because as I said, understanding it really helps. So the first one we have is called secure attachment. Now, secure attachment is kind of established when children trust that caregivers will be responsive. They show distress when they're separated and joy on union. And generally, this style generally leads to healthy emotional and social development. Now, how this could look like in a romantic relationship is that they easily trust others and are comfortable depending on others whilst also allowing others to depend on them. They have effective communication skills where they're able to express the emotions, their needs, and feelings. They manage their emotional regulation well, so stress and conflict are dealt with in a healthy way. They have healthy boundaries where they maintain their own identity as well as respecting their partner and their relationship. And they're generally comfortable with emotional closeness and they don't fear being abandoned or overwhelmed. Now, a lot of people will say that secure attachment is the ideal. And in as much as there are people out there who are securely attached, I will say, this is just my own generalization, so this could be entirely inaccurate. I could be projecting, I could just be speaking from just, I don't know. But I would say most people are not securely attached. And you know, that's okay, it's realistic. Because at the end of the day, our early caregivers are human too. So in as much as you can try to be a good caregiver, things happen. And sometimes we make mistakes and we do things that are maybe, you know, a bit murky. But you know, that's just part of life. So a lot of the time, secure attachment seems as it's the ideal, but it's very rare to find. And it's something that most people have to work towards to be securely attached. Now, the next attachment style that does exist is called anxious attachment. Now, anxious attachment is developed when children become very upset when their caregivers leave. They may struggle to depend on caregivers due to inconsistent care. Now, how this can look like in a romantic relationship is deactivating coping strategies. To maintain distance, sometimes anxious people may want to come closer and need a constant need for reassurance, where they frequently worry that the stability of the relationship could be crumbled if there's silence or if there's a bit of space, and they need a lot of validation that they are loved and the person that they're in a relationship with will stay. They do have an intense fear of abandonment, and that anxiety comes from the fear of rejection, often leading to clinging or demanding behavior. This sometimes can also stem from low self-esteem, where their self-worth heavily relies on their partner. And this could also lead to emotional dependency. They have hypervigilance, overanalyzing a partner's words or actions, and reading negative meanings into neutral situations. This could look like, you know, for example, you send your partner a text and they reply 2 hours later. Maybe their response time is looking a bit slower, and an anxious attachment person will be like, oh my gosh, they don't love me anymore. Like, what's going on? Like, and because of that, something in them inside will kind of pull them to come closer. Maybe double text to ask, are you okay? Tell me that you love me, type of thing. These people may also have difficulties with boundaries, as viewing necessary space or independence in a relationship as a threat. And this could also lead to people-pleasing behavior, where they neglect their own needs to keep a partner happy. Now, with anxious attachment style, once again, this is one end of the thing, one end of things. And then we have something else as well that's, I would say, the direct opposite of anxious attachment, and it is called avoidant attachment. Now, avoidant attachment is when children act emotionally distant and may ignore caregivers, or caregivers ignore them, because caregivers could have been emotionally unavailable or even neglectful. Now, how this can pan out in a relationship is that these people value independence above all else. They like to see themselves as self-sufficient, and sometimes when other people kind of go to them for closeness, they may feel as if it's kind of protruding on their independence and they feel suffocated. These people also tend to suppress their emotions, where they may dismiss their own feelings or struggle to support their partners emotionally. And they also are also hypervigilant, but in a different way from anxious attachment, where they constantly watch for signs of being controlled or having their autonomy threatened. So it's very interesting to see how we have anxious attachment on the one end that's like needing more so reassurance and constant validation, and we have an avoidant attachment that's more like distant, more kind of intimidated by how if somebody comes closer, it's like, oh my word, do I lose myself as a person? I need to back away. You know, these people can be very nonchalant and distant. And yeah, it's very interesting to see, because we also do have a middle ground to this, which is also defined as fearful avoidance, which also can be called disorganized attachment style. Now, with disorganized, it's a combination of anxious attachment as well as avoidant attachment, where children show confusing or inconsistent behaviors towards caregivers because the environment they grew up in was unpredictable. How this can look like in a relationship, this could be somebody who's very big on the push-pull dynamic. One day they act intensely romantic, they seek closeness, they really are there, but then other times they act cold, they're very distant, they're very withdrawing, because once they see danger, they pull back. They have deep trust issues sometimes, because they struggle to trust others and often have a negative view of themselves, leading to a belief that they're unworthy of love, or they could be betrayed or could be cheated on. So it's kind of like, because of this fear, they could act very unpredictable, where they can come closer but also take two steps back, because of that hypervigilance as well, where it's like they want to protect themselves but they also really want closeness. And this push and pull could also kind of cause relationship sabotage, because as intimacy increases, their fear also increases, causing them to create conflict, deactivate, or even pull away, even if they really desire the relationship. Now, anxious attachment, avoidant attachment, fearful avoidant, secure attachment, these are all different ends of the spectrum. And it's very important to kind of discover, especially if you are somebody who's within the dating realm, to discover where you fall along the lines. And you know, me being a curious person, I was like, you know what, let me take an online quiz and find out what exactly is my attachment style. And I have a prediction, but I was like, you know, let me not jump. But funny enough, my prediction was right because I did do a test. I think the website is actually called attachmenttheory.com. So, you can type that on Google. If you want to find out your attachment style, then you can go and find it out. It asks very insightful questions, very personal questions. You really got to think about it. And I also would like to put a disclaimer that just because you do an online quiz to your attachment style, that doesn't mean that is the law and that is factual. At the end of the day, such diagnoses should be done by a medical professional. So, but this is just for fun and games and just, to know ourselves better. And personally, when I did the quiz, my prediction was actually right because I got fearful avoidant. And I feel like that's so accurate because there's been moments in my life where I'm like, oh my word, I'm the most distant, cold person. I kind of put myself far away from people. But then there's other times in my life where I will literally crash out if somebody doesn't answer my text within 5 minutes. It's happened before and it'll probably happen again. So it's just like this when I was talking about the push-pull dynamic, I was like, this is me. I do act hot and cold sometimes and I do relate to certain things. But just because you get diagnosed or you find what your attachment style is, that doesn't mean, you have to accept it. And I'm just like, I'm fearful of wine and that's just me. You're just gonna have to deal with my hot and coldness. No. The right way to go about things, or I would say not right way, but the more progressive way, if we're being fancy. The more progressive way to go about things is to actually learn how this developed, learn how this has affected your life, and also to do the inner work and healing to grow into a more secure attachment style in order to kind of have better friendships, better romantic relationships, better relationships at work, at home, to really foster that. Because sometimes we've noticed actually that with all of these attachment styles, they have their flaws, they have their disadvantages, and all of them in a way can kind of destruct the relationship slowly. Especially because I know on TikTok, I see the common dynamic where the anxious attachment person and the avoidant attachment person become a couple, and it's just an ultimate disaster because it's just like the anxious person is just like, I want you close to me, and the avoidant is like, I need space. And it's just like, oh my gosh, what's going on? So it's just so interesting to see. And even in my own experience, I feel like being somebody who's fearful avoidant, I've noticed that if I'm dealing with somebody that's more so on the anxious lens, then I'll become more so avoidant. But if I'm dealing with somebody that's more on the avoidant lens, then I become more anxious. So it's like, it's very interesting to see that, huh? So my behavior does change. And also, certain things in my life have happened where I'm like, okay, I'm swinging on either end of the spectrum. But it's so interesting to know these things and to know and be able to identify them. And honestly, to grow as an individual and to be more self-aware because at the end of the day, we just want to learn more about ourselves, about the environment, and about the whole world and universe. So it's been a beautiful episode here at Science Package. We spoke a lot. We spoke about potholes. We spoke about small towns. We spoke about anxious attachment styles, all the attachment styles, actually. So it's been quite an informative episode and a very lovely conversation. And one thing I would really love is that we can continue this conversation. If you also want to do the attachment theory quiz, send me your results. Let's discuss it. Let's even have a tea session. And of course, to engage with us, you can contact Madiba's Radio and engage in Madiba's Radio on all social media platforms because we are everywhere. X, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook. You can even find us on LinkedIn. Who knows? Maybe you can get a job. Maybe you can be here with me. We can have a little kiki. But of course, if you want to engage with me specifically, my name is Tsoketelo. You can contact me or keep updates with me at Ketelo.Tsigo on Instagram and on Facebook at Tsigo K Ndlovu. This has been Science Package. Of course, same time, same place next week. Bye.
Oh, yes, I like it. Madiba's Radio.